Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. We have a jumbo edition here. Well, I don't know if it's going to be jumbo. We'll see how long-winded these stiffs are here with me. But to my right is Mr. Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
Eric Astroslager.
Hey there.
Daryl Loomis.
Howdy-ho.
And Jason Pinella returning again.
Ahoy.
That's right. So you know how this works. We'll just kind of charge through and see what we can cook up for your entertainment dollar. And I think, Mac, you would agree that you don't get more bang for your entertainment dollar than the Friday Filibuster, correct?
Oh, of course.
Of course. I think there's the stats to prove it. But, Jason, we'll kick off with you. I haven't heard from you in a while. Seen anything interesting lately?
I caught Captain America Winter Soldier in the theater last week, and I really liked it. Liked it a lot. Trying to think what else. My wife and I have been plowing through the show Gilmore Girls, which never watched when it was on the air, and she's a big fan, so we've been watching it, and it's really digging that too. Kind of has that snappy pop culture laden dialogue, which I always like. But the other, maybe this isn't entertainment related, but Friday Filibuster alumnus Mike Rabino got married this past weekend.
That's true. There you go. That's right. Nice.
Hey. Yeah, so got to go to his wedding, which was a blast.
So, it's like you're the ring bearer. You're always a Friday Filibuster, right? Even if you tote the ring around briefly. So it's good to have him there. Yes. Winter Soldier, I was thinking about it a couple weeks past. So I know, did we talk about it briefly when we were saying how people have been comparing it to like a 70s spy movie, right? That kind of stuff.
Right.
I know we probably talked briefly about it, but Mac, I think you made the point that, I mean, at the end, big giant ships do go boom, right? And there's huge explosions. So it's like, yeah. I guess I wouldn't get carried away with that. It's not like, you know, this isn't Steve McQueen film or anything like that. You know?
Yeah.
It's influenced by.
I guess influenced, yeah. So I'll take it as far as they want to give it to me, but it's still a pretty, you know, it's a popcorn, big explosion kind of movie at its heart.
I don't remember who said this first, but I feel like it's been compared to something like Skyfall, which makes more sense to me than like the 70s. There's some similar themes. I don't know.
Yeah, good point. Nice. So, but thumbs up from you then, huh?
Yeah, definitely liked it. As far as like the standalone Avenger movies go, it's for at least for me, it was near the top of the heap. So I liked it a lot.
Agreed. I still agree with that. All right, Eric, how about you?
Well, I also saw Captain America in the theater. My theater-going experience for, I think it was the second time I've been in the movies this year. It's pretty good with a newborn at home, so just bragging, you know. But, it was a lot of fun. I thought the action was really great. There's some really great fight scenes in it. And, Dave, you know, I know you saw something that has even better action, but
yes.
As far as, you know, your standard non-insane top-of-the-heap special, you know, action movies go... The Captain America definitely delivered.
Absolutely.
I've seen all the Marvel movies, although I realized recently that I've only seen each of them once, which is kind of weird. But at some point I'll go back and rewatch them all. But I feel like it's as a franchise, just a Marvel movie franchise, it's just kind of gotten better and better. Whether the movies are actually better each time, I don't know, or if I'm just more invested or what it is. I mean, it's crazy to see where they've come from, because there was definitely a time, even as late as as late as Iron Man 2, although that's probably one of the least regarded movies, but you know, before Avengers came out, when it still seemed like it's kind of cool that they're doing this, but these movies are sort of a mess. Like there's never been a really great one. Iron Man was very good. And Captain America maybe was the one that really cemented it for me. But ever since Avengers kind of brought it all together, it's felt like I really want to go each time one of these comes out. I really like the whole thing. Even movies that I wasn't crazy about the first time I saw, I've got to reevaluate or at least have some affection for, because they've built this like the movie equivalent of reading comic books. I mean, they really have created this almost like self-perpetuating machine, which is interesting, because I like comic books and I like movies. As long as it doesn't infect every other movie out there, I think it's pretty cool. But I'm definitely excited for what's next, since next is Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's probably my most anticipated.
Yeah, I think I've been like approaching it differently. I guess it just – I guess I'm not as bought into the whole overarching phase by phase mythology and how everything interconnects and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like, and because what, you know, what struck me watching Captain America is how different a type of movie, and we talked about this again, but how different type of movie it is than Thor, right? I mean, they're just totally different character. I mean, it is kind of got that connective tissue of the world. And you know, I guess the hack joke, at least my joke, and I'm a hack, is Captain America is just speed dialed Thor to take down those airships, right? You're just
right,
like,
right.
I mean, these guys are buds, right? But anyway, so, but like, I think what I appreciated about it is they diversified their movie portfolio enough so that there is, like, again, I may not love Thor as much, you know, the Thor movies that might rock me as much, but like the Captain America I like. So Captain America gives me kind of that, you know, not the godlike superhero. It's a little grittier, right? A little, you know, more like the action scenes in Captain America are different than any other ones, right? They're like street level guns, that kind of spy stuff. So I've kind of, that's what I've come to appreciate the movies, that there's something for everybody type of thing.
And it's, I mean, that's true. Comic books as well, though.
True,
it's not like
absolutely.
Every Marvel comic book has the same art style or tone or feel. They're very serious ones and more lighthearted ones. So I think in that sense, these movies have captured that feeling of each. I'm not sure if any of these Marvel movies could truly stand on its own as a movie completely separated from every other one in the, you know, the Marvel family. But they do each have their own distinctive look and feel. It depends on who's directing it. I mean, you got the guy who directed the first Captain America, who I'm totally blanking on. Is
Joe Johnson.
There you go, Joe Johnson. And, you know, you have that, or we have Kenneth Branagh, or you have obviously It Is Late and I'm Tired. Anyway, you have all these directors.
I guess I'm just not as, like, I guess the whole ongoing mythology doesn't – like, I like the mini Captain America story that's going on. Like, I'm looking forward to the third movie when Falcon and Captain go in and they're the Bucky stuff. That seems where they're going, right, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm looking – like, those little things, like the Falcon-Captain America friendship partnership, I really liked, you know? And I'm looking forward to how that – I'm looking forward to more how that – kind of relationship grows and, how, you know, how the Bucky stuff resolves and the third movie, you know, kind of turns and, like, I guess a lot of the overarching stuff. I mean, I'm still excited to see what the Ultron craziness has for me, but I guess I just like some of the little things in Marvel, so whatever.
That's fair. I mean, I think that the good thing about these movies is that they work on the big scale and the small scale.
Yeah, I would say.
They're absolutely constructed in a very shrewd, business-savvy way, but at the same time, they're a lot of fun and enjoyable and kind of get to the spirit of what makes reading comic books fun.
All right. 30 seconds for anyone else who wants to add to that Dave and Eric-dominated conversation. Oh. No? Going once?
I'm good.
Twice, everyone? Okay.
I'm good.
I'm right. Great. So we could probably take that offline, I think. So we'll continue this on our Facebook chat. All right. So who do I – so we got Daryl, what do you got?
Not much. I haven't – most of the TV that I'm watching is running down. I was happy to see Mad Men get started back up this past Sunday. And I was happy with the episode, but there's not much to say about it until I see where they're going. Mostly I've been taking advantage of my subscription to this new WWE network.
Oh, has it been paying off for you?
It's getting my money's worth.
All right.
It's not that much money for how much content there actually is if you're into that sort of thing. So, you know.
Hey, real quick, I'm going to spin this on you. Best wrestling movie you've ever seen?
Like movie about pro wrestling or that like has like pro wrestlers?
About pro wrestling. Yeah. Not. Because obviously it'd be They Live if we had, you know.
Probably.
That's the easy.
All right. So, The Wrestler is probably the best movie about pro wrestling.
Mm.
But then there's the one that's got like Vern Gagne and Terry Funk in it from the 70s that's hilarious.
No Holds Barred doesn't crack your top five?
No Holds Barred probably doesn't crack my top
five. I just asked because I just recently reviewed that. You know, watched
It's pretty poor.
It is pretty terrible.
It's a pretty poor movie.
It's got one of the great cartoony 80s villains, who, like the TV producer who is so deranged that he wants ratings that he goes to felony kidnapping and attempted murder. You know?
I mean, it's just so dumb. And the problem was at the time, and I knew this as a little kid, or I was not a little kid at the time, but probably 14, that it was a big black cloud that was just taking a crap on wrestling at the time. And because Zeus came into wrestling and the whole thing got dominated by this stupid movie that was objectively terrible.
It was pretty terrible. All right, let's not spend any more time.
It's not. So anyway,
Right.
Let's move on. Got nothing.
Let's go to something that's not objectively terrible. Mac, I know what you're going to talk about. You kick it off.
Yeah, how about the Raid 2?
How about that Raid 2?
Yeah, we went out to see this, and it's really is amazing film. I think what people need to know about it, though, is that it's more than just constant nonstop action.
Which was the first Raid to me was an exercise in constant action, right?
Right. There's just lean and mean guys go into the building and fight.
Right.
The Raid 2 is much more ambitious. They're looking at, you know, The Godfather and Goodfellas and The Departed / Internal Affairs. And so they're doing the crime epic, you know. And they're taking the crime epic and then they're adding to it the just insane, unbelievably violent action from The Raid.
Yeah, Daryl, this is like – I haven't seen – I mean, this is splatter movie level violence. That is,
yeah.
I mean –
I'm looking forward to it. After I saw the director's
the
entry on VHS2, which was brilliant and crazy, I was even more excited.
So Mac, I'll ask you. You know, after a week digesting it, so you know, another little filibuster venture. Mac, myself, and a buddy of ours. But you know, after because we were all, you know, I mean, we saw it at 10 p.m. and we got out of it like I didn't get home until like 2, or you know, and I'm just saying I was just so jacked up on adrenaline, you know. So so after it's kind of, you know, sat with you for a week or so, any other thoughts, any additional reactions?
The film's biggest strength, I mean, everyone talks about the action, but really it's the build up to action is so strong, you know. Again, because it's really a rich story that they've developed. You know, we've got the undercover cop, and we've got rival gangster families going on. There's tons of characters. Each character has his or her own subplot, and it's just the tension just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And there is one moment as the movie enters its final third where you just know it's about to happen. You know? It's like the hero of the story gets this look on his face and he starts, you know, walking along and you just know, oh, now it's going to happen, you know. And so it's that long drawn out buildup really made, and the action is great, but that long drawn out buildup made it so much better and made it so much more intense because you're really invested in what's happening.
So essentially how this shakes out is like there's a lot, I mean, not to spoil anything, but there's, you know, there's undercover work, there's, you know, back and forth, gang wars, all this kind of stuff. Betrayals and blah blah blah, and there was a point where I was watching. I was like, okay, this is interesting, but this isn't kind of what I paid for, right? You know, so it's like this is cool, and there's some really cool action sequences, but I haven't seen anything yet that kind of blows my mind like the first Raid. And then it did kind of dawn on me. They start to introduce some crazy like mid-level video game bosses,
yes.
You know, just to describe it. So there's like there's this deaf girl who attacks people with hammers. She has a hammer in each hand, and it is as gruesome as you can imagine. And she is joined maybe by her brother, who uses an aluminum bat and a softball to kill his guys. So there's these two very cartoonish. And then there is like a super mega badass who we don't see much of, but you know he's a badass. And then it just dawns on you that our hero, who we know is just ridiculous because we've seen him in prior movies, but the director's like, you see him in some spot action scenes, but he is being held back. Like, you know, it's a conscious decision. They are holding him back, and there comes a specific point where he just gets unleashed, and you have like a half hour of just like stuff I've never seen before. Like some of the best stuff. You know, I mean, Hollywood's best action can't touch what The Raid does here, and it is just. Again, so there's like the long build up to the action, but the action itself builds up. So you're getting these encounters, like a huge encounter with a bunch of guys, and then he faces off against those bosses, and then there's just a fight that I think outdoes the 2-on-1 Raid fight, which is saying something, I think. But
The final fight in the raid,
the 2-on-1. I find there's a 1-on-1 battle at the end, and that it was all building to that is just so well done. And so exciting and thrilling that it even outdoes that. And again, these are broad daylight, no jumpy cuts. These are it's these guys, you know, just doing their stuff, and is unbelievable. Like, it's crazy. I was thinking, like, I don't know if I'd love to sit through it again, because the buildup and the violence, there's some tough stuff. I mean, there's a guy is given an X-Acto knife to cut the throats of four thugs, and it's brutal. Brutal. Yeah. So the build, you know, the long buildup and some of the violence is like, oh, it's gonna be tough to sit through. But like the payoff, I know, is gonna be just so great that it's worth doing. So I don't know, high marks for the Raid 2 for sure.
Yeah, looking forward to it for sure.
I think it should be on DVD pretty soon, because I think it flopped in the box office. So you'll be able to rent it tomorrow probably. So okay, so real quick stuff we got for the site. I guess back to the top of the order, Jason, go ahead.
Oh, wow. I picked up this amazing Z-grade 1990 action movie called Killing American Style. It's by this Iranian director named Amir Shervin. And I have a feeling Daryl might have seen some of his movies. He did a movie called Samurai Cop. And
I remember the box, at least.
Yeah, I haven't watched that. I hear good things about it.
Oh, man. Well, this isn't as good as that. Samurai Cop is up there with, like, Psycho Kickboxer as far as just, like, gloriously dumb, amazing stuff. This is, I mean, it's good. It's terrible and good, but it's just not as insane. It's just got... I mean, terrible fight scenes, terrible dialogue. A lot of the dialogue's actually reused from his other movies. He just, like, you know, takes whole, you know, conversations and just lifts them and puts them in this movie from other movies.
Nice.
And it's one of those movies where I'm having a really hard time actually writing the review, because it's great and terrible, and I just don't know what kind of grade to give it, but... And I'm actually sending this your way, Dave, so you get to
that's very nice of you. I can't wait. Thank you.
It's pretty amazing.
Very nice. All right. Eric.
All right. This week I'm reviewing the new remaster of Fargo on Blu-ray, which is part of – I can't remember who's putting it out now. I think I'm not going to guess. Anyway, the studio is remastering a bunch of old stuff. I think it's the same one, the same studio that did RoboCop and Total Recall. It was part of their like 4K Blu-ray. Anyway, it looks really good. I actually haven't had a chance to compare it with the old Blu-ray yet. I borrowed it from the library, so I can do my diligence and compare the two.
You are otherwise, professional. Wow.
I'm professional. Otherwise, it has the same extras that have been on every other thing, but it looks real nice. So. No crazy sharpening. It looks like a movie. It looks like a movie, Dave. I like movies that look like movies. Call me crazy. But that's me.
Okie dokie, Daryl.
I actually haven't reviewed anything for the site in a while, but I never got to speak about Riot in Cell Block 11, and it actually hasn't gone up on the site yet, so... and it hasn't come out yet. It's a Criterion release, an early Don Siegel movie about a riot in Cell Block 11 at San Quentin. And Folsom State Prison. And, you know, it's all it's very small. It's all shot on the site in an abandoned cell block. The guards in the movie are the guards of Folsom Prison, and the extras that are the other prisoners are the other prisoners, and it has this really real feeling, and the riot is badass. It's from 54, and it's just good, gritty. It's like a film noir prison movie, and some good fighting and some good crazy characters and good fun stuff.
Nice.
So basically Jailhouse Rock.
Jailhouse Rock, but it's no songs. It's the thing. Okay. It's got the same tone,
same
as
gritty,
Jailhouse Rock.
Pretty realistic.
Yeah, same gritty tone, same like realism, yep, all of that same incredible fight sequences.
Sure, absolutely.
As Jailhouse Rock, just no singing and dancing. So,
gotcha. Okay,
you know, well, it's give and take.
I guess if you don't like musicals, then
Yeah, it's shorter than Jailhouse Rock. So,
no musicals. So yeah.
All right, Mac.
Speaking of gritty realism, from 1963, I'm reviewing King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Good for you, Mac. I requested that one too. So.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
Well played, Mac.
Yeah. Interesting. This is only the third Godzilla movie. I thought it was a lot later in the cycle. But it's also the first time Godzilla was ever in color, and King Kong, for that matter.
Did they include the alternate Japanese ending by any chance?
You know, I did some research on this, and nobody on the internet can seem to agree just what the history of this movie is.
Okay.
There are two endings. There are three endings. There's an alternate version made for television. There's scenes with stop-motion animation that were cut out, and so on and
it's
so on.
It's like the
on.
Kaiser Soze of man in suit movies.
It is. And no, it seems that no one really knows just what the deal is with these multiple endings, if they exist or not, and how many there are. There are zero bonus features on the Blu-ray.
Gee, what a missed opportunity.
Exactly. So we'll have to keep on speculating.
Don't worry. My fan fiction is ready to go.
The movie itself is a blast, though.
But doesn't King Kong, he eats magic berries, and that's why he grows huge? Isn't that something?
Yeah, because you know he has to be the same height as Godzilla, you know.
Yeah.
Because King Kong climbed the Empire State Building. Godzilla's as tall as the Empire State Building. So, he eats the berries and that make him grow to insane height. And he gets struck by lightning, which gives him electro powers, and that helps even out the fight.
Oh, man.
A monkey that tall is going to get struck by lightning.
A monkey that tall.
That's inevitable.
That is science.
Two movies in a row that are exactly like Jailhouse Rock.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, I can't believe they cut the musical numbers out of King Kong versus Godzilla.
Well, that's a shame that missed no extras. Just lift a finger. Give us something, right? Give us something.
Right, yeah. This would have been the perfect time to, you know, especially with the new Godzilla coming out, they could have come out and said, you know, okay, this is the history of the movie, and here are the alternate endings, but nope. Just throw it on disc and send it out there.
Well, for me, as usual, I have one terrible thing and one pretty good thing. So the good thing is a Korean film called Confession of Murder. Worth checking out, I think. It's an interesting concept. I have to do a little research on Korean law because it's based around a serial killer who comes clean after his statute of limitations expires. So I don't know if they have statutes of limitations for murder in Korea, so I'll have to double check that. But that's kind of the hook. The statute of limitations expire, the killer comes forward with a tell-all book, and then the detective who chased him this whole time, they start kind of butting heads, and then kind of just balloons, you know, kind of spirals after that, and there's a lot of really good twists and some great action, actually. There's some very well-done action pieces, including a really inventive car chase. Not quite as great as The Raid 2, which has a badass car chase, but a very good one in itself. So worth checking out, I think, Confession of Murder. It's the terrible one. Since we had a little Noah on the brain these last couple of weeks, I got
to ask you about this actually.
Yeah, Noah's Ark, this animated one. It's like whatever you think about, you know, Noah's, you know, the Darren Aronofsky's, you know, biblical soundness. I can't imagine you watching this pile of rat garbage. I think it's so dumb. Like, do we need? So it's the Noah story from the point of view of the animals. Okay, and these are like anthropomorphic talking animals.
This looks like a really based on the cover. Wow. This looks like a really smart movie, Dave.
Yeah, and they've got like, and there's all these little stories. Like the lion has been given, he's going to be the king of the jungle. And then they introduce these bizarre elements, like the female tiger on the ark is this bosomy seductress. Like, this is a kids' movie, and like the king of the jungle is like attracted to her. It is weird, and there's these couple.
Wasn't the flood supposed to tone down on that sort of thing?
I would think. And yeah, then there's the bad guy or these two crooked shop owners, so they escape on the ark, and they want to be the first shop. They want to be the first shop owners to really make, you know, to make a lot of money in the new world.
Where's Noah going to go for his equipment?
That's right. They're
selling his lumber.
These conversations about how they're going to drive the prices up, you know. Like there's five people left who are going to – they have to reinvent currency. So it's just really dumb. And then, spoiler alert, they get dropped off in the Arctic Circle or something. And it happens off screen, but I'm pretty sure they get mauled to death by polar bears. So that'll be a fun thing for kids. Stupid. I mean, I don't know. Just really dumb. Really, really dumb.
I hope it's 3 hours.
No. Okay, so you can read the review. That'll be out. Review will be out. Maybe it'll never be out. Maybe if Michael has any, you know, sympathy for the world, we'll never see the light of day. Okay, ambush topics. Let's get right to it. These are random stuff thrown at each other for fortune and glory. So, Mac, why don't you kick us off?
All right. Well, in honor of one of the Raid 2's most memorable scenes, first topic is chaos in the kitchen.
Well, I've gone there several times over the course of this show, but I'll go back again to Gremlins.
That's a good one.
And the fight scene in the kitchen with the blended gremlin and the microwave gremlin. Is that it?
Great one. Now you win.
Yeah. I win? Oh, great. Okay, thanks. I'd like to thank my mom. I'd like to thank my agent. Let's thank Noah.
I'm going to go with Jurassic Park and the kids who are consistently feral.
Yeah, the monsters.
I think back. There was like some small. Wasn't there like some small controversy about that? Like, oh, I can't believe Spielberg's putting these kids in peril. You know? Do you remember hearing about this?
Spielberg always puts kids.
He does.
In peril.
He always puts kids in peril.
Yeah.
That's how he makes money.
But, you know, it's kind of easy to laugh off. But if you kind of look back at it, those kids get destroyed. Like that little that little boy gets electrocuted, right?
Yeah.
He's thrown off the electric fence. He's like limping around. He just gets rocked.
Well, why did he get thrown on against the electric fence? That's my question.
I don't know.
He was climbing over.
Doing some victim blaming here, but
okay, that's right. We'll blame. Okay,
I'm going to go with it's not quite inside the kitchen, but it's just outside the kitchen. Is the scene in at the beginning of A History of Violence where the gangsters come in and Viggo Mortensen dispatches them extremely violently.
Yeah. Extreme Prejudice.
Yes, it was brilliant, violent. Mm.
I'm going to go with the TV show Dollhouse, that there was a turning point in the first season of the show where it went from being a okay show to a really good show where there's just this insanely vicious fist fight in a restaurant's kitchen that lasts like 6 or 7 minutes, and there's just, you know, knives and blood everywhere. Yeah, good stuff.
Cool. Well, for me, I went back to a movie from the 90s that's kind of fallen into obscurity a little. Maybe you guys have heard of it, maybe not. It's called Warriors of Virtue.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
I never saw it. I remember the trailer and thinking it looked terrible.
It's like a ripoff of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, except instead of turtles, they're kangaroos. And they fight. But the thing is, the movie opens where the main character, who's this kid, is in visiting his friend who works at a restaurant. And there's this amazing scene where this chef guy is doing all these martial arts moves to, like, cook the food. You know, he's, like, throwing plates around, and he swirls around. He does, like, this kick to kick something into a plate, and this steam is flowing everywhere. It's this really awesome scene. And I was really into the movie. I'm like, man, if they're devoting all this action into a guy making dinner, how great is the actual fighting going to be?
Right.
But it turns out the fighting is guys in kangaroo suits, and it's just terrible.
That's unfortunate. Does that ever make it to watch this DVD?
Yeah, so if you're going to watch this movie, just turn it off after the guy makes dinner and just skip all the kangaroo stuff.
Just like Jailhouse Rock.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay, Daryl, go ahead.
Bad mail, like unfortunate mail.
That it's M-A-I-L, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Although Unfortunate Mail sounds like a Korean action movie.
Yeah, it does.
Let's see. So something that is delivered somewhere to somebody, I guess. Okay. One of my favorite, possibly my favorite TV show of all time, Angel. Right, we got some Angel shadows here.
Mm-hmm.
A very unfortunate package delivered to Fred in a sarcophagus that coughs up some ancient fungal god crap and turns her into Illyria, which is the old one, in a very heartbreaking episode.
That's the worst, man.
It was rough. So that was a suck way to go for sure. I know. It's tough.
I know. Yes. Jason's reliving some trauma there after that.
Yeah, I'm with her. I think I'm going to faint. Well, I'm going to go with movie 7.
Oh,
all right. Next.
Moving on.
Moving on. Thank you.
It says slightly a little more. They're still in the mail thing, right? I got disconnected.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. A little lighthearted, unfortunate mail. The scene in the first Harry Potter movie when all the letters start piling into the Dursley house.
That is good. That is
good news for Harry, but you know,
not for the what are their names?
Not for the Dursleys or the environment.
Yeah, or the environment. A lot of trees died to drop.
A lot of magical trees died.
Yeah. There are even fewer magical trees than there are regular trees. Exactly. So shame on you.
I mean, owls are a renewable energy source, doesn't it?
Yeah, they burn great.
They do burn great.
That's right.
The sorting hat needs to eat something, right?
More owls.
I guess the only one for me that comes to mind, the plot, and I can't believe I remember the plot, but the plot of the third Naked Gun movie all has to do with letter bombs and Frank Drebin trying to stop the letter bombs. And it ends at the Oscars, where one of the envelopes at the Oscars contained a letter bomb.
And who was performing? One Pia Zadora?
That's right.
And I believe she doesn't do it, but Drebin vomits into a tuba. That's quite excellent.
They were classy at that point, man.
They were very classy, absolutely.
Just me?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, well, I'm going to go with the episode of The Simpsons from, I don't know, fairly early, where Bart winds up finagling to get a credit card for the dog, Santa's Little Helper. And mine is the day that he gets all the bills.
Okay.
For all the crap he's bought.
Santos L. Helper.
Yes, Santos L. Helper. Yeah, whatever.
All right. I'm losing. Jason, why don't you go ahead?
Basketballs.
Basketballs, plural. So not like basketball sport, but actual basketballs. Huh?
Singular, actually. Basketball.
Basketball. Okay.
All right, I got this one.
All right.
Wes Craven's Deadly Friend.
Okay.
Features this great death scene where it's a movie about this robot girl who goes on a killing spree. And at one point, you know Anne Ramsey from The Goonies and Throw Mama from the Train?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. She's the mean neighbor. And the robot girl breaks into her house, takes the basketball, and like uses her awesome robot strength, throws the basketball right at Anne Ramsey.
It's basically like a scene that would happen in a horror version of Small Wonder.
Yeah, exactly. And
so small wonder.
It's this unbelievable gore effect. Her head just explodes with blood and slime everywhere, and then it ends with the bloody basketball bouncing down around the room. Yeah, it's a terrible movie, but it's hilarious at the same
time.
Funny.
It's Wes Craven at some of his worst. So I'm going to go with another terrible movie, and I've mentioned it before, and I was actually thinking this might be what you were going with, Mac. I mentioned it before, but it can't be mentioned enough, is the super long Atlanta basketball team game at the beginning of the Visitor.
Oh yeah.
That ends – the scene ends the whole – it's like almost the whole fourth quarter of the game. And at the last second, like the last second shot, it's all in service of showing that the crazy little girl has psychic powers and explodes the basketball in midair for the last shot.
Yeah. And we don't see any follow-up to it. They immediately cut to another scene.
That's the end
of the basketball game.
And then they just move on to –
You don't even know that she ruined the game. It's that abrupt. Yeah.
She just winds up cussing out John Huston and we go home. It's hilarious. One of the weirdest movies I've ever seen.
All right. I'm going to outdo that with one of the greatest movies ever seen. And the correct answer, which is Fireball. The 2009 Thai movie, the tagline, basketball as an underground blood sport. It's a fantastic movie. Basically, it's you try to make baskets, but you can also get beaten to death with things. And there's like some Shaolin soccer action with laser fire basketballs. And it looks like, you know, on the surface, kind of a playful kung fu comedy, action comedy. It is a hard R action movie, and highly recommended to everybody.
Is there anything like Deadball, those Japanese death baseball movies?
I haven't seen them, so I can't speak to them.
Okay.
Those are like comedies.
Okay.
Now, this is played straight. This is played straight, honestly. Yeah, it's like used at Amazon for 70 cents, so what are you waiting for?
I just added it to my Netflix.
Fantastic. All right. Excellent.
Well, Dave, I'm going to go with the real, real answer, of course, and really one of the greatest movies ever made, and that's Air Bud. Of course, the original Air Bud. I mean,
that is solid. The correct answer.
Dave, solid. Dave, the dog plays basketball.
Dog does play basketball.
Dog really plays basketball. The dog can play basketball.
And not poorly. Like, he does a good job.
Yeah.
The dog plays basketball. That's all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then I'll close with in The Expendables, there's the scene where Jason Statham goes and pummels all those dudes on the basketball court and then deflates the ball with his knife.
See, the problem with that is, like, that would have fit well in The Expendables 2 as far as the tone goes. Mm-hmm. But the first Expendables was super serious, so it didn't quite fit.
Yeah, like if Jean-Claude Van Damme had put a knife through a basketball, it would have been hilarious.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, the tone was a little off.
You're, like, really glowering at them, doing it, staring at them.
Right.
So, you guys excited for Expendables 3?
Whatever. I'm down, I guess. We'll see.
I'm not going to the theater for it.
Yeah,
but.
Probably not, even though it seems like it should be ingrained in my DNA to do that. But, yeah, just unless I'm just really wowed by word of mouth and the trailers and stuff. We'll see. Right, right. Or I got nothing better to do that night. So.
Yeah.
That works.
Okay. Eric, what do you got?
All right. Sourpusses. Sour pie? Sourpusses.
Man.
All right, I am going to go with the Santa at the top of the slide in A Christmas Story.
He's a ruiner of things.
That guy was a jerk.
Yeah. It shouldn't be too hard. Anything. Let's see. Well, Kevin Spacey's character in Seven. Okay, no. I guess.
He's a downer.
He's kind of a downer. Now, Charlie, you don't want to go evil. This isn't evil. You know, this,
no. This is sour.
That's Freddy Krueger. He's a real sour.
Freddy Krueger's a sour. Sourpuss.
You know, say, hey, somebody you could say, hey, turn that frown upside down.
That's right.
And then they'd slice you open with their knife fingers.
Okay, I'm going to go with. I'll go with Anakin Skywalker.
That's good. There you go. Sourpuss.
Yeah,
all
he's kind of
there
we go.
Circa Revenge of the Sith or whatever. Yeah, just snap out of it, man. You know, just
whole family's a bunch of sourpusses. Right?
They are. They absolutely are. Pretty much. It's like, just get a grip.
Now I can't stop thinking about describing Freddy Krueger as an old sourpuss.
Sourpuss.
I don't know. It seems like any movie set in an orphanage is going to have the person who runs the orphanage as a total sourpuss, but I cannot think of a specific one.
Well, I'm going to give you I'm going to try to
from one of
I took it. That was my assistant.
Great Expectations.
Oh. maybe Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, right. She's a sourpuss.
She does not let them get away with any fun.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. You've got to be an Arrested Development sourpuss. We haven't had Arrested
Development. I've got an Arrested Development sourpuss for sure.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Go for it.
I'll give you a bonus one. Go.
Lucille.
Yeah, I guess she's sourpuss. I guess that.
Bit of a sourpuss.
Look, Tom Jane wasn't a... He was kind of a...
Kind of a
stick in the mud, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was going for a role. He was going on a role. He just wants his kids back.
He just wants his kids back. That's right. Like, just want your kids back. You're going to be a sourpuss.
Yeah. I mean, with a few exceptions, Anne could be a bit of a sourpuss.
Yeah, that's kind of a sourpuss.
That's true. Yes.
Who? Her?
Exactly.
Egg.
That's right. Egg.
Annabelle.
You know. let's not be Ann Hogg.
Is it down to me? I think.
I guess so.
Yeah, I think so. This might be it's been a while since I've seen this movie, so I could be off. But Jack Black's character in High Fidelity, I remember him being kind of consistently grouchy the whole movie.
Yeah, he's
pretty slap across the head. That's sourpuss material.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, prickly. I think
that's a good word too. Yeah, well, I do my word-a-day calendar open over here. Mine, this week I saw Saving Mr. Banks, you know, the semi kind of maybe true story. It's actually not even at all a true story of P.L. Travers' relationship with Walt Disney to get Mary Poppins made. And in real life, she hated the whole project, hated the movie, all that kind of stuff. In the movie, she comes around by the end and at least appreciates some of it. But really, man, during most of that movie, she is just a negative Nelly. The whole – it's kind of – I mean, like, it's weird. Like, they go to the trouble of completely, like, retconning the ending to make it happy. But they leave the rest of just the, like, you know, no, 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 no. It's kind of a downer. I don't know. I didn't love it. Kind of a sourpuss. That's all I'm saying. All
right. Well, I'm going to take – here. We're going to go full on Arrested Development here. So real people playing fake characters. So real people playing fake characters of themselves.
So actors? Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. So like, it's like Andy Richter?
Well, there you go. Is that your entry?
I don't know. I mean,
that sounds right.
That sounds to me.
That would be the thing,
Do you mean only on Arrested Development?
Yes. It has to be in Arrested Development. Within the cosmos. So Andy Richter is a very good one. Yes.
Carl Weathers
is an excellent one. Yes,
that's my go-to.
Oh, you know what? Here's I'm going to spice it up. With your character, you have to say that your favorite moment featuring them. Okay, so I'll go back to you, Eric. Favorite moment in Arrested Development featuring Andy Richter.
Does he drop a sandwich at some point?
He does drop a sandwich.
Steps on it.
That's right. And Jason Bateman refers to actors as national treasures.
All right, so it's me with Carl Weathers then?
Yeah, favorite Carl Weathers moment.
We'll go with him at the Bluth party while he's still giving Tobias lessons, telling him, you know, I always keep my per diem, you know, you go to the craft services table, you get some, you know, bacon, you get a couple potatoes, baby, you got a stew going.
There's too many.
Pretty much, yeah.
$1,100 is exactly what I charge for acting.
Exactly.
And my favorite act, I buy all my cars at police auctions. See, it's full of stuff. You're married to Carl Weathers? Oh, it's the best.
Yes.
Do you love ham? No. I love
it. I love it.
Do you like ham?
Do you like it?
No.
Do you like ham? No. I love it. Okay. Focus.
All right. So Arrested Development, I guess Ron Howard then as producer.
That's good. Good. Very good.
Yes. I did a cameo at the end of season 3, then was a big part of the Netflix season.
I like how he holds a grudge against the narrator of the fake Bluth story.
That's yes.
His nurse has a grudge.
Yeah. What's your favorite moment?
Favorite moment? There was a kind of a bit of a slapstick moment where Michael Bluth is stuck in the elevator with his crew. I believe Carl Weathers is there too. And Ron Howard's like on the floor looking down on them in the elevator. And they're trying to like pitch their project or whatever from being stuck inside the elevator.
Because Ron Howard has to have his ceiling like 2 inches higher than everybody else.
That's right. All right.
I wonder if I can go with Tom Jane.
You absolutely
has he been okay?
You absolutely.
Like his brief moment there is definitely one of my favorite, I think, parts of the whole second season.
Well, and what was funny to me about it was that I didn't actually know anything about Tom Jane when he showed up on that show. So it wasn't until I saw the first episode of Hung, I believe, that I actually realized that this was an actual dude.
Right.
So you know, you learn something new, but. To me, it was just another character, like, what's his name, Rob Corddry playing, the gun nut, whatever that guy's name was.
Right. Frank Wrench.
Frank Wrench, yes. She just wants him to strip her nuts.
Is that everybody? Is everybody gone? Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
All right. I'm going to go with Judge Reinhold.
Yes. No, of course.
Yep. Mock trial with Judge Reinhold. Yes.
So there's also, as far as it goes, Bud Cort.
Bud Cort. There's William Hung in the Hung Jury, obviously.
Yeah, William Hung in the Hung Jury. That one's fun.
Quick, the shout out, Judge Reinhold. All rise for acting's highest honor, Judge Reinhold. Judge Reinhold either is real judge or is received acting's highest honor. And he wants the form-fitting judge. Well,
really tight. I do all those sit-ups for him. I'm going to be wearing this.
There's also the news anchor who always does the, like,
oh, yeah, it's like the LA, the Orange County news anchor.
I'm looking up his name right now.
David Tell is Tobias, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's sober.
It's a cup of keto, and you won't believe what it costs.
Maybe a special honorable mention to Burger King. You know, as a,
yeah, it's a wonderful restaurant.
It really is.
Oh, fantastic! Oh,
there's so much. There's so much.
Yeah, there is so much. So, all right, I'm sure some other will occur to us. But that is it. That is the end of the Friday filibuster. So, thank you for. Hanging with us, Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is the email. So thank you for the whole crew for coming out for tonight. And Mac, take it away.
My name is Judge.